What's up, everyone? Welcome back. Between the Tackles, episode 43. I am your host, Burge. I'm back at it again. Week one is in the books. NFL season is finally back. It was a fun weekend of football. I'm excited to get into talking about it with all you listeners out there. Our boy Hogan, we send our regards to him who had his lovely work schedule changed this week. So he is not here tonight for the episode, but I am joined tonight with our friend of the pod, great friend, great supporter, Manish Mehta. Welcome back. How you doing tonight?
I'm doing great, Burge. I can't wait to hear about your fantasy team, but I guess we'll do that a little bit later.
Yeah, it was a pretty bad week for my fantasy teams this week. Four leagues, I think I won one of them and had some really, really bad beats in the others. So yeah, we'll definitely get into that in a little bit. Going to talk everything week one, some intriguing matchups, some upsets that I didn't expect to happen, but I'm very happy it did happen. We'll get into that a little bit. We'll talk about some intriguing matchups coming up for week two. Football's back. I am so pumped. It was so nice to watch football on Sunday and have it be actually mean something, right? Right, Manish? It's so nice to actually have meaningful football as opposed to watching, I don't want to call it fake, but like watching like teams really giving 110% on the field and fighting to win the game versus just putting on a show to try to make a team.
Yeah, I mean, I totally agree. I mean, it's so much different than it was even like 10 years ago when at least the third preseason game, you could pretty much see starters versus starters for at least a half, usually like 2.5 quarters. So at least you got to look forward to, you know, watching some semblance of, you know, quote unquote real football. But now the preseason schedule is such a joke. Nobody takes it seriously. You know, half the teams don't play their starters at all during the preseason. And I know, just thinking back to last month, I think I watched maybe a total of, you know, 4 or 5 quarters of the preseason. And that was for fantasy football purposes, to be honest with you. So, I missed a couple weeks. I don't think I watched the second preseason week at all. There's not much value in it from a fan's perspective. I mean, even less than there was, you know, 10, 15, 20 years ago. So I'm right there with you. Just to see these guys out there when it counts, you know, you got your fantasy team to root for. You got your, you know, your actual team to root for. Really fun. And I always love week one because it's not really indicative necessarily of what the rest of the season holds. There's so much wacky stuff that happens in week one. Teams that look terrible, you know, end up being one of the, you know, better teams in the league. Teams that look incredible in week one wind up flopping. But that unknown and that anticipation is something, you know, I don't know where you watch the games. I went out with a few friends you know, just getting that feeling of the first kickoff and first touchdown and just the unpredictable nature of the sport, which makes it so fun, is, you know, something I'm glad to have back.
I don't know if you're like me, but you sit there, you watch a little bit of week one football, and you're going to see the rust from the guys not playing in the preseason and all this. And this may sound a little like greedy or like, I don't know the right word I'm looking for, but like, I find myself sometimes, all right, can we get to like November, December football? Where we're talking about playoff implications, everything. I don't want to rush the season, but like, I'd be lying to you if I didn't say that I was feeling that on Sunday a little bit, where I want like, all right, it's week one. We know what we're going to get. It's great to have it back, but I'm ready for like the intense matchups again.
Yeah. I mean, that part is fun, but then yeah, you're fast forwarding a few months, and like the biggest enjoyment that I get is the actual week in and week out, you know, storylines and drama and upsets and, you know, and unfortunately injuries that occur that kind of flip different teams' fortunes on their head. So I know what you're saying. There's nothing like, you know, December football, frankly, before the playoffs even begin. But I really enjoy the beginning of the season. And frankly, you know, I'm not a Patriots fan. Obviously, you are. So I would think that you would have loved what happened a few days ago with your team.
Absolutely. I'd be lying if I wasn't. I was pretty stunned. We'll get into that in a little bit here. But we are recording on the 23rd anniversary of the September 11th attacks in New York. So I wanted to mention this briefly. This obviously the event, I was a young kid when this happened, but I do remember watching the events unfold in school. I was old enough at that point to somewhat understand what was going on. And obviously now being a guy that is an aviation as my, is my career, having gone to college, one of my classmates was the son of a pilot, one of the pilots of one of the first planes. So there's a real personal connection to the events that happened 23 years ago for me. So I just wanted to, you know, obviously acknowledge that that had that, that it is the anniversary of that, and to never forget the victims, the first responders, that, you know, made the ultimate sacrifice to, you know, try and save so many other individuals. And, you know, one of the things that pops into my head football wise when it comes to this is the, obviously the week of football was canceled that week, following the attacks. And then the week after, when football resumed, the Jets were in New England playing against the Patriots. And one of the Patriots offensive linemen, Joe Andruzzi's three brothers, were firefighters for FDNY. And they were on site. It was actually, you know, I just watched the clip before we got on and started recording again. It was a very emotional experience watching that again and kind of understanding, like, you know, it's bigger than football, and the connection there is pretty big. And I do want to also mention that that also happened to be the night that, I guess you could say, kickstarted the New England Patriots dynasty, because that was the night Drew Bledsoe got hurt and Tom Brady took over for the starting quarterback for the Patriots. But I just wanted to touch on that. I don't know if you want to add anything on that, Manish. But yeah, I wanted to really get that out there.
Yeah, I echo those sentiments. Obviously, it was a watershed moment in world history, let alone American history. What I take away from that, and I think, you know, some people share the same sentiment, is that all of the stories that emerged in the subsequent days, weeks, months, even years later, of the people that helped out on that particular day, whether they were firefighters or police officers or just, you know, a guy walking on the street that may have helped somebody in, you know, those panicked moments. I mean, those are stories that resonate with me. It really gives you, you know, a microcosm of, like, the power of the human spirit. You know, there's a lot of angst, and even today, 23 years later, a lot of angst and animosity and hatred you know, among certain people, certain groups across the world, in the United States, against the United States. So to see the American people galvanize in that moment, I think, was really powerful. Sports obviously was an outlet, and it still is an outlet for so many different people, but especially, you know, during that time period, you mentioned the Andruzzi brothers. Obviously, that was a very powerful moment, you know, in the run-up to that game. You know, Joe Andruzzi, as you know, and every Patriot fan knows, you know, has gone through a lot, you know, since he stopped playing football, you know, beating cancer. So just an incredible story in and of itself. But sports, you know, whether it was football, you know, I tend to remember the baseball memories, you know, being in and around New York. Mike Piazza hit this really emotional, powerful home run in the Mets' first game back after 9/11. That resonates with so many people, sports fans in New York. You know, of course, you know, that season, George Bush throwing out the first pitch at Yankee Stadium was a big moment. So, you know, it was comforting to know that a lot of these athletes, especially the athletes, again, I don't mean to make this a New York-centric, you know, sports story, but it really was impactful to see so many New York athletes go down to Ground Zero, help out how they could, comforting people who were, you know, still looking for loved ones. And this is in the, you know, the immediate aftermath of 9/11. You know, a lot of baseball players, a lot of football players, Giants players were, you know, really part of the same team, you know. And I think even in that first week after the games resumed in the NFL, regardless of the team, there was just a little bit of closeness and just like this, you know, difficult to describe feeling, and where, you know, players on both teams, you know, kind of understood, you know, what had happened, the gravity of the moment. And while they were still competing for, you know, for wins and losses, it was just a different feeling. You know, I remember, you know, just being in the media and thinking, yeah, these guys, you know, don't want each other to win that particular day. But there was also a sense of brotherhood. And I don't mean to be Pollyannish about it, but that really was the feeling that I got, that there was a camaraderie and you know, people galvanizing around such a terrible moment. And, you know, two plus decades later, I think you saw the best out of American people for sure in the aftermath of that moment. And that's, you know, something, frankly, at least from a personal level, that I wish, you know, would be more consistent, day in and day out. You know, I just think that in that moment, people just seemed closer. They understood each other more. They wanted to help each other heal. And, you know, you definitely don't want anything like that ever to happen again. But if you can find a silver lining and kind of remember just how people responded and took care of each other and looked out for each other after that, you know, that is a memory that that I will always remember.
Absolutely. Let's get in to week one of the NFL. Let's move on. So we had our live stream for opening kickoff between the Ravens and the Chiefs. So I don't want to talk too much about that game. Obviously the Chiefs won that game. We'll leave it at that. I don't need to talk any more about Patrick Mahomes or Taylor Swift or anything like that. So we're going to move on to the second game. And this one featured your team, the Eagles, down. Was it Sao Paulo, Brazil? Is that where the game was?
Yeah, that's where it was.
The first game in South America for the NFL. I saw that stadium. I wasn't very impressed by it. Just the pictures of it. And then you saw the players, you know, getting off the plane, and they just didn't look like they wanted to be there in any way. I saw something that was, I think it was it the Eagles that were told, you don't sleep on this flight. Don't sleep on the 9-hour flight down there. And
yeah,
I'm like, okay.
Yeah, I mean, they had like, I'm sure the Packers had the same type of meeting, do's and don'ts. Essentially they were just told to stay in their hotels and go through the walkthrough and then go back to the hotel, go to sleep, go to the game, and then get out of Dodge. You know, some of the Eagles, like Darius Slay, were outspoken about not necessarily wanting to go down there, not really understanding why they had to go down there. Obviously, it's more of a, you know, a money-making venture to expand the NFL brand than it is about necessarily caring about the players and coaches. Because, you know, if I would gather, if the players and coaches had their druthers, 99% of those guys would have preferred to play the game in Philadelphia, which is where it was scheduled to be played, and it was technically a home game for the Eagles. So, you know, whether there's another game in Brazil or South America, you know, that's TBD, but I wasn't particularly impressed by the idea of it, and clearly the field wasn't up to par. Guys were slipping left and right. It actually reminded me of a couple years ago in the Eagles-Chiefs Super Bowl, where the field was pretty slick, and you know, a lot of the edge rushers on both teams, you know, had their issues with it. And I think, you know, that's just not something that needs to happen. You know, the NFL makes plenty of money, but this idea of growing the sport so that it touches every corner of the globe is something that the owners are clearly, you know, motivated to do. And, you know, Roger Goodell carries out the owners' wishes, and ownership is clearly of the mindset that we want to take over the world, for lack of a better phrase. You know, I don't understand it. I'm not on board with it. London to me is okay. You know, I'm fine with that. I'm not necessarily on board with Germany. I know that the Patriots played there, you know, recently, but I don't like this idea and this chatter about possibly having a game in Australia. That doesn't make any sense to me at all. But ultimately, it's about making money for these 32 owners. And if they feel like they can expand the brand and make more money through those channels by taking it to different parts of the world, then I can't foresee them stopping it, even if I do disagree with it.
They basically can do whatever they want at the end of the day. Like, the NFL is such a cash cow. People are going to watch no matter where it is, no matter what's going on. They can basically do it will. And the players kind of really have to play ball. They kind of, you know, the owners really drive it. And, you know, I'm on board with London a little bit as well. I'm not necessarily on board with them putting a team there and having a team there all the time. I think that's asking for a problem. Germany's pretty cool, but again, you're going further and further away now, and you're asking these guys to do this, and you're going to create schedule nightmares, and you're going to eventually have a union fight on your hands if this continues to happen. But, you know, we'll see what happens. I'm not necessarily on board with, you know, Australia or Brazil, even for that matter. I wouldn't feel safe going down there doing that either if I were those players, especially those guys that are worth a lot of money. I mean, you're basically putting a target on their back by going there. But the Eagles end up walking away with a massive win down there. You know, it was a pretty pretty hard fought battle, come from behind win, 34-29. What were your thoughts on your Eagles' performance in week one? You know, obviously noting the conditions of the field, it being week one, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, look, I've like, my entire life, even when I was a teenager, I've tried to be a fairly rational Eagles fan. You know, I've had, and I am actually on a text thread with about six or seven of my close friends who are diehard Eagles fans, a few of them who are just drinking the Kool-Aid and, you know, and nothing, they can't do anything wrong. And, you know, Howie Roseman's the best general manager in the history of sports. And Jalen Hurts, you know, rivals Patrick Mahomes as the best quarterback in the NFL. You know, I'm not cut like that. Like, I don't subscribe to that idea. Like, if they're playing really well, I'll be right there at the front of the line. But if they're not, I'm not going to pretend that, you know, things are perfect. And when I look at that game, the thing that stands out to me the most was the questionable decision-making by the quarterback. And, you know, I've been privately critical of Jalen Hurts for a few years. You know, I think he's a good player. I don't think he was ever in the class of a Patrick Mahomes. And when the Eagles did go to the Super Bowl a couple of years ago, there was a lot of chatter about whether he was in that same class or even better than Patrick Mahomes. I never believed that for a second. I didn't believe it then. I don't believe it now. I don't think that'll ever be the case, frankly. And if you look at that game on that first Friday night, he had two interceptions, easily could have thrown four. There were two that were dropped by Packers defenders. His decision-making was highly questionable. Now, he wasn't completely awful because they did win the game. He made an incredible touchdown pass to Saquon Barkley right on the money. I think he did well to close the game out, so you got to give him credit for that. But all in all, coming off a season that he had last year, the most turnovers he's ever had in his career, you know, I wanted to be a little bit more sure of, you know, the quarterback after week one. And I think there's just as many questions as I had, you know, at the end of last season as I do right now. The bright spot offensively, obviously, was Saquon Barkley. A really bad first week for Giants fans to see Saquon, you know, run all over the place and be the Saquon that he was when he was a rookie. And then a few days later to see the Giants play as awful as they did in that loss to the Vikings. Just a terrible few days for Giants fans. I'm happy that the Eagles got Saquon Barkley. I think he's really going to take a lot of the pressure off of Jalen Hurts so that the Eagles can win games when Hurts plays, as uneven as he did the other night. Defensively, frankly, I wasn't particularly impressed other than Zach Bond, who they got in the offseason. I mean, he was a beast. I think he had a couple sacks, 15 tackles, all over the place. Really impressive how Vic Fangio used him. The disappointing part of that is that they didn't really get a semblance of a real pass rush against Jordan Love. And Bryce Huff, who was their main free agent signing, paid him over $50 million coming over from the Jets. If you didn't know he was on the roster, you wouldn't have believed he was in the game. I think he may have gotten one tackle. You know, no pressures, no real havoc that he created off the edge. And I think that is going to be a real concern potentially for the Eagles. Can they consistently get heat on the quarterback? Because even though Jordan Love got hurt at the end of the game, and even though the Packers lost, he had plenty of time in the pocket, found plenty of guys who were running free. The secondary was a big question come into this season. I'm not sure that they've really answered much after the first game. So a lot of question marks still remain for that team. All that being said, being a team like the Packers who went deep in the playoffs last year is certainly nothing to be ashamed of. I think it's a solid win for them. They got a lot to work on. They're playing Monday night at home. For the third consecutive year, actually, opening up at home, their home opener is going to feature Kirk Cousins. They play the Vikings in a weird schedule quirk each of the last 2 years. They beat Cousins both of those nights. And even though I'm bullish on the Falcons, even though they really were unimpressive in week one, I don't think it'll be a cakewalk in week two for the Eagles on Monday night.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that Green Bay kind of showed me what I kind of expected out of them to start the season. They did have a little bit of struggle early in the game. I didn't catch a lot of this game due to being at work, but I was checking the stat lines on Josh Jacobs, and it seemed like it took him a while to get going in this game.
Yeah, it did. It was funny because in the first half, the runs that they got that were successful from Emmanuel Wilson, they weren't from Jacobs. And Jacobs did a nice job when things kind of loosened up in the second half. And he finished, over 5 yards carry. So if you looked at the stat line, you would think he had a really good game. But, yeah, it took him a little while to get going. That the makeup of that team is completely different now for the next month. Malik Willis being their backup is highly suspect. I mean, that guy has not impressed me once since he's been in the league. Every time he stepped on the field with the Titans, really underwhelming. Everything that LaFleur likes to do has to be streamlined now. Getting the two tight ends involved, getting those three or four wide receivers involved, it's going to be so much more challenging. They're going to have to, I think, be more of a much more run-centric team than they probably anticipated entering the season. I mean, this is a Super Bowl contender, in the eyes of a lot of people, including me. And I think it's going to be tough sliding for the next month or so until Love gets back.
It's definitely a shame that he got hurt so early in the season. Of course, it was in like meaningless time. I mean, you're talking with seconds left in the game. He ends up going down with, I think it was an MCL injury. When I saw it happen, I'm like, that's not good. That looks like it might even be his ACL. So very glad to see that it wasn't that.
Real quick,
like with Josh Jacobs, getting back to him real quick. I mean, you take out his 32-yard run that he had. I mean, he's under what? He's just over 4 yards a carry at that point. That kind of that stat line gets inflated because of the big chunk, the one chunk run that he had. I think at one point he was like 4 for 8 yards or 5 for 8 yards when I was looking at it. I'm like, I was texting one of my good friends who's in the fantasy football league with me who has Josh Jacobs. I'm like, that doesn't look good for you. You know, he's trying to come back on Monday or on Sunday night or Friday, whatever. He was trying to like get a good performance out of him because he was going up against a juggernaut in the league. And I was like, yeah, that's no good. But Jaden Reed showed up again. You're seeing what you kind of expected from this young wide receiver room for the Packers. And it really is a shame that Jordan Love is going to miss some significant time because I kind of have the same opinion on Malik Willis as you, where, he was in that draft class that really didn't feature any real quarterback talent. And I think he was one of the top guys that ended up going off the board in the second round of his draft, if I'm recalling correctly. And there's a reason Tennessee moved on from him when they did. And, you saw stuff going around. Who are the Packers going to go out and actually like, are they going to sign somebody to come in? Or are they going to trust Malik Willis with the keys? Saw the memes floating around with Tom Brady in a Packers uniform.
Tom Brady.
Like you're going to see Brady's those.
He left the door open. He said he definitively retired and he's definitely not coming back. He wouldn't have this, but I feel like that discussion, I think there was a discussion, last year when Aaron Rodgers went down, whether the Jets would go after Tom Brady. I mean,
those memes are never going away. The memes are never going away.
They're not going to go away. I agree with you on Willis. I mean, I think he had a good Senior Bowl. I do remember that. And maybe that's why, he got pushed up. But he wasn't drafted by this regime, new general manager, new head coach. So that's why, they moved on from him. I just don't know what they can realistically expect. And I mean, there's nobody out there. There's Ryan Tannehill who's out there. I mean, that's what you're talking about. You can't, and it's not like fantasy football. It's not a video game. We can just plug a guy in. You got, especially at the quarterback position, you're coming in, you're coming in. And that's why, I'm so impressed. I don't mean to go on a tangent here, but that's why I was so impressed by what Joe Flacco did last year. He came in off the couch and assimilated to a new team, new players, new scheme, and it was almost seamless for him. But I think the reason I was so impressed was not just because of his age and the fact that he hadn't played, but that's the exception that that proves the rule that it's very difficult. It's an aberration. I don't think there's any kind of elixir out there for Green Bay. They're gonna have to ride it out with Malik Willis and hope Love, is a fast healer. But I just think, I'm not a Packers fan. Now, I do have Jordan Love in fantasy football, but that aside, even if I didn't have him, you don't want to see these young quarterbacks get hurt. I mean, part of the reason we love football is because of these dynamic young players, especially at the quarterback position. I wouldn't want C.J. Stroud to get hurt a couple years ago. Excuse me. I didn't want Joe Burrow to get hurt. I mean, you'll disagree with this, but I don't want Josh Allen to get hurt. So, you know, it's good for the game.
I don't want anybody hurt. I don't want anybody right. hurt.
It's good for the game to have these young guys. And Jordan Love showed so much promise in, you know, the last month and a half or so of the regular season and obviously in the playoffs and that playoff win against the Cowboys. I was really curious to see how we would build upon that this season, just as a football fan. And, you know, it looks like his season, at least, you know, the first quarter, third of the season is going to be derailed by injury.
And then, you know, once he comes back, what's that going to look like? It's going to take him some time to ramp back up again, where this is the time where they are supposed to be ramping up. So he's going to kind of set back kind of the trajectory of the Packers at this point. They're just going to hope that they can kind of tread water
right
in this point and kind of still stay in that, in the hunt for the race for that division, which is probably going to be, my guess, very competitive with, you know, I mean, the Vikings. Sam Darnold looked pretty good on Sunday, but like,
my guy, Sam Darnold's my guy. I just for fun on the platform formerly known as Twitter, I think maybe weekly or so rank the AFC East quarterbacks, and I remember Darnold had just come off of Offensive Player of the Week. He had mono, and so he missed a few games early in the season a few years back. Came back at home against the Cowboys, and he just lit the Cowboys up, and they beat the Cowboys. And I did my quarterback rankings for the week in the AFC, and I had AFC East. I'm sorry, and I had Darnold ahead of Tom Brady, and Patriot fans did not let me forget that for years after that. Because admittedly, Brady was not—he wasn't playing particularly well, and I don't think he played well that season. And
Darnold, 2018, 2019, I think, is probably what you're talking.
It may have been Darnold. I mean, it may have been Brady's last season in New England. It might have been. But it was coming off an incredible performance that Darnold had. And I've always, you know, been a guy who was hopeful that Darnold would be good because he's a good kid, got a good family. And, you know, Jets were just dying to have, like, a franchise guy. And I actually thought that he would have a chance. But, yeah, so I had ranked Darnold ahead of Brady that particular week. And I'm telling you, like, years later, Patriot fans were giving it to me about that, which is the dangers of social media, the dangers of Twitter. You know, I've been on my fair share of freezing cold takes. I mean, that guy has lit me up a few times.
Well, you can add one more Patriots fan. That's not going to let you live that one down.
I mean,
it was Brady's last season.
Yeah. So he wasn't playing well. It was early in the year. You know, and you know, Darnold was on a heater, so, you know, I went with it. Obviously, I was not right.
And you can't be right all the time, right?
No. I've been wrong more times than I well, like I said, Patriots, Bills fans, they regularly remind – and Dolphins fans regularly remind me of my affinity for Sam Darnold a few years ago.
Hey, I think he's going to do pretty good up there in Minnesota. So we'll have to see that because, like I said, that division – for Green Bay is going to be competitive. You have obviously the Detroit Lions. We know what they are. We have the Packers, and then we have the Bears with rookie Caleb Williams. And then your boy, Sam Darnold with the Vikings, who I think is going to, I was actually like not down on him when I found out he was going to start there. I think he's got a chance where he can, I'm not saying he's going to light the world on fire, but like he looked pretty good in the one time we saw him last year with a competent team in San Francisco, and he looked half decent. So it'll be interesting to see, but to kind of transition into it, you know, talking about, you know, rookie quarterbacks, that's kind of where I want to go. I know Darnold's not a rookie. Malik Willis is not a rookie, but Malik Willis, for all intents and purposes, should be a rookie because he's never really played in the league.
Yeah.
But obviously week one saw a lot of, Bo Nix, Jaden Daniels, and Caleb Williams make their NFL debuts in regular season football. I want to get your take on, well, we'll start. Who was the best performer, and were any of them actually any good?
Well, it's an uphill battle because, you know, rookies typically don't win their first games as full-time starters. You know, statistically, obviously, Jaden Daniels had the best statistical game, the best fantasy football game, if you want to put it that way. but the way he generated a lot of his points and yardage over, I think it was like almost 90 yards rushing. I think he ran the ball six, or he had 15, 16 rushes, something like that. That's obviously not sustainable. I mean, he did score twice. One was in garbage time. But he wasn't awful. You know, I think he looked okay. Caleb had his fair share of struggles. You know, I'm a big believer in Caleb Williams. I think that he's going to have a good career. He was in a tough spot. I don't think a lot of people understand how good the Titans defense is going to be this year. They have a new head coach in Callahan, a new defensive coordinator. So it's a different scheme, not really the poorest defense that we saw last year in Tennessee. So, you know, Caleb completing, I think he completed, I want to say it was under 50% of his passes. Didn't even throw for 100 yards, which is unbelievable when you think about that. Didn't throw any picks, so he's got that going for him. I'm curious to see how he does moving forward. He's got a tough game in Houston on Sunday night. He won't have Roma Dunze, who's out with an MCL sprain. Who knows if Keenan Allen's going to be healthy? He's dealing with an injury. So that trio of wide receivers that I thought would really help out Caleb Williams, you know, DJ Moore, Allen, and Adunze, you know, there's a chance that two of those three guys won't even be there in his second game, which could make things difficult, in addition to the fact that I'm a big believer in the Texans this year. So, you know, I don't think he played particularly well. I guess that's a roundabout way of me saying, am I surprised? No, but I would say Daniels played better than Caleb Williams. Bo Nix really in a difficult position. I mean, when your first game's in Seattle, I mean, it's difficult for veteran quarterbacks to play in Seattle. And I've been to Seattle and watched games there several times, covered games there a bunch of times, and it is loud. And, you know, you hear it on TV, you hear announcers saying it's loud, but if you're watching at home, you're watching on the red zone, you don't get a real understanding of how loud it is. You know, for my money, Denver and Seattle, and maybe to a lesser extent Pittsburgh, those are the loudest places I've ever been to. And you know, the press box shakes at those places. That's how, I mean, maybe that's just shoddy workmanship and the construction's not good. I don't know. But like, it is ridiculously loud at those three places. You can feel it. And it's noticeably different than in any other place that has, you know, 60,000 people in it. So maybe it's the acoustics, maybe it's, you know, the design of the stadium, but that's a tough place for a rookie quarterback to make his first start. So, yeah, you know, he struggled, you know, predictably so. You know, I actually am a little bit higher on Bo Nix than I think the average fan is. I don't think he's in the same level of player as Caleb Williams or Jaden Daniels, but I do think that Nix has a chance, especially with Sean Payton as his head coach, to have, you know, a solid rookie year, something to build a foundation for moving forward. But none of them were particularly impressive. I think if you had to choose one, because of the dual threat, I would go with Jaden Daniels. He was very effective as a runner, but again, 15, 16 rushes a game, that's not sustainable. He's not going to make it to Halloween if he you know, gets banged around that much, because the only guy that can withstand that type of punishment, and I still don't understand how, is Josh Allen. And that's just, you know, for most quarterbacks, double-digit carries means a lot of potential hits, and that's not a recipe for success. So, you know, these guys, it's going to take some time. First game, regardless of what we saw in the preseason, everything's vanilla in the preseason. I even think Bill Belichick mentioned it a couple weeks ago when he was breaking down Caleb Williams. He wasn't particularly impressed with what he saw in the limited time in the preseason, you know, from Caleb Williams, even though Caleb made a couple, you know, dynamic throws. So it's a work in progress for these guys. You know, it's very rare that a guy comes on the scene and hits the ground running, you know, from start to finish. So there's going to be plenty of growing pains. I think all three are talented, especially Daniels and Caleb. And I do think that when it's all said and done, that the Commanders and the Bears for sure are going to have, you know, a lot more positive things to look back on at the end of the season than, you know, some of the hiccups.
You know, I think Caleb Williams actually happened to be like the first rookie quarterback that won his game, obviously on the legs of his defense.
Oh, right. Like, you know, it's so funny. We're talking about him, and he clearly played like a quarterback of a team that didn't win, but you don't factor in a block punt for a touchdown or a pick six. I mean, all credit goes to Chicago's defense and special teams for a game, frankly, that the Titans blew, because the Titans, I was watching a lot of that game, and, you know, Will Levis in many respects, gave that game away.
Yeah, it's incredible to see. And I didn't actually realize it was that long. I forget. I don't even remember who it was, who the last rookie quarterback to win their start was. It was before Andrew Luck. It was before, like, we're going back over a decade since.
Yeah, that's a good question. You know what? I don't remember. I don't remember who the last rookie was to win. It just it felt like a loss. It, just like us talking about it, it felt like a loss because he didn't play as if he deserved to win. And frankly, you know, he got bailed out by others.
First rookie quarterback to start a game in week one and earn the victory since David Carr in 2002. Longer than I thought.
That's actually really funny because David Carr's rookie season, like, basically mauled him for the rest of his career since he was sacked so many times.
Exactly. Like, that's wild. I didn't realize it was that long.
I didn't even realize he won that first game. When I think of David Carr's rookie season, I think of him getting sacked, like, a ridiculously high number of times. And then he got skittish in the pocket, and he never really fully recovered. But I didn't realize he actually won that first game. That's a good trivia question.
That's wild. That's wild to me. Let's move on. I want to move on to another quarterback starting his first game in his second stint with the team. But I want to move into the AFC East. I want to get into the meat and potatoes right now. I want to talk about the Pats and the Bengals. Okay.
Right.
Obviously, I'm a big Pats fan. I did not expect this. I was on Running with the Jungle, which is a fans first affiliate podcast that Hogan and I joined on Thursday night. And we were talking about the game with a couple of Bengals guys. And, you know, I was like, man, you know what? They're going to lose like 21-10. It's not going to be a blow. It's not going to be like a super high scoring game because Patriots have a really good defense, but they're not going to be able to do anything. The defense of the Patriots played far better than I expected them to play at the beginning of the game. For the duration of the game, we'll call it. I think in the first three drives or first four drives for the Bengals all went 3-and-out. Like the Bengals could not do a thing against the Patriots defense. Kind of set the stage for kind of an offensive performance for the Patriots, which is what I kind of called for on that podcast as kind of a key to a victory, is if they're going to have to basically establish the run and focus on running the ball if the offensive line can get the push and get Ramondre Stevenson going. And they did just that. Ramondre went for over 100 in this game, had a couple of big runs late. And, you know, the defense, Keon White was an absolute beast, made the Patriots look like, hey, we don't need Matthew Judon. We got Keon White now. And, you know, he was kind of my guy. Again, I said this on the Running with the Jungle. Like, Keon White's a guy to watch. He's going to be in an increased role this year. He's a monster. He's a big guy. 2.5 sacks. And I was very impressed with the way the Patriots played defensively. And that shouldn't come as a surprise because we knew what the Patriots defense is. But offensively, it kind of felt like, you know, there were periods in that where I was like, okay, this is a different offense. They just drove the ball 80 yards and they actually did it methodically and all that. But at the same time, you did see a little bit of the same stuff from last year, but you had a quarterback in Jacoby Brissett who, with his veteran presence, did not just chuck the ball up for grabs, was able to determine when he needed to pull the ball down and take off and take the yards that the defense was giving him. Mac Jones would never have done that. He would have thrown off his back foot and thrown it up to who knows who. So that was very, very good to see. He did have a couple of miscues where it was like, what are you doing throwing that ball? But again, we know what Jacoby Brissett is. So that is what it is. At the end of the day, the Patriots win 16-10. Gerard Mayo gets his first win as a head coach. And it was refreshing to see. And it's like I'm trying as a Patriots fan not to get that false hope. Oh, we got a chance now. I know what the season is. I'm not letting it happen. Do I think there's a possibility they could end up 3-0? Yes, because they're playing Seattle at home, a West Coast team playing a 1 o'clock game on Sunday, and then they get the Jets, who we know what the Jets can do, and I'll never write off a game against the Jets. So that's the fan in me talking. Do I think it's going to happen? No, but overall, for week one of a season that I've punted away, I'm very happy that I got to watch a winning game. Did you see any of this game, Manish?
I did. I didn't watch all of it, but it was on an adjacent screen, so we were watching it. For most of the afternoon. My sense was that the Patriots were in control from the jump. You know, mm-hmm. It wasn't some kind of situation where, if anything, you thought that would the Patriots choke it away? because
they almost did.
Yeah, and they almost did. But like, you would think that if I told you, you know, Saturday night that the Patriots were going to win, you know, you would probably think that somehow the Bengals blew it or the Patriots pulled it out at the end. But the tenor of the game was completely flipped. It was as if the Bengals were the underdogs and they were playing catch up the entire game. You know, Keon White is a guy who I remember when it wasn't that long ago, but when the Patriots drafted him, he was the guy who was a converted offensive player, tight end maybe. And then he transferred. He was at Old Dominion. He's a tight end. And he transferred Georgia. Was it Georgia Tech? I don't remember exactly.
I'm not sure.
Yeah, but he was a converted, I mean, super athletic guy. You mentioned he was 6'5", whatever he is. I don't know, 270 or just a really athletic player who had been an offensive player and then transferred schools and then really was only, you know, a defensive lineman edge rusher for one full season in college. And, you know, obviously went through a transition period last year. I mean, did he get a sack? Maybe he got one sack. I don't know. He was a complete non-factor last year, but the athletic skills were obviously there. I mean, mm-hmm. even, you know, that's why he was drafted as high as he was drafted. So I think that speaks to the coaching that, you know, he can make this kind of leap in his second season. I mean, he's obviously not going to get 2.5 sacks every game, but he was lined up against Trent Brown for a lot of that game. Trent Brown, you know, say Patriots fans are familiar with him. He's not like a scrub. So, you know, the fact that he was able to be as dominant as he was really bodes well for this season. Again, I mean, he's going to go through his growing pains as well, but the physical tools were there. And I'm always impressed when a guy at the college level can transition from one side of the ball to the other and then make an impact at the NFL level. And this is only the beginning of year two for him. So the fact that he's off to such a good start when he's really been only a full-time defensive player for 3-4 seasons, even counting college, I mean, that's not that much. So I think the sky's the limit for this guy. And I think that he's not going to be Matthew Judon, you know, this year, but he can definitely, you know, create enough havoc and, you know, make some impactful plays, you know, as he did week one, you know, for the majority of this season. I mean, I don't want to anoint him and call him a Pro Bowler, but he's clearly a player. The guy can play. I mean, that's the point. He's not going to be an also-ran. He's not a non-factor. He's going to be a guy that's going to make a valuable contribution. To what level? You know, time will tell. But the fact that he, you know, came out of the gate so hot and so impressive against, you know, a professional tackle, a solid player, to me, is encouraging if you're a Patriot fan. On the other side of the ball, you know, you mentioned Ramondre and you mentioned Jacoby Brissett. I mean, all I heard this offseason was how the Patriots offensive line was going to be a train wreck. You know, who's going to play where? What are they going to do? You know, they re-signed Onwenu in the offseason. I mean, is he going to play tackle? Is he going to play guard? Earlier in camp, in preseason, he was playing guard, and then they ultimately kicked him out to the tackle position. They were missing two starters or guys who were supposed to be starters entering this game. And then they got a fourth round rookie in Robinson playing playing right guard. And if you look specifically at the runs that that Ramondre had, yeah, I mean, he had 120 yards. Incredible. Two thirds of that, about 80 yards, was running to the right side. And he averaged, I think, 4.8 yards a carry for the game. He averaged 5.3 carries running to the right side. So clearly in this game, running to the right side was the bread and butter. And that's anchored by a guy that you retained in free agency that you believed in. And he came through and a fourth round rookie. I mean, that to me is a great sign that, you know, this offensive line is probably a lot better than what conventional wisdom was. And I know that Gerard Mayo talked about how, you know, he never, you know, believed all the criticism that was being heaped on this offensive line over the past month or two, or even this entire summer. So it'll be interesting to see when the, you know, projected starters come back in. It's also interesting that the Patriots ran so well on a day where they switched left tackles, like, you know, what, a dozen snaps? Yeah, like, you know, a dozen snaps into the game. So, I mean, that's unusual, you know, for that to happen and still be so successful running the ball. Their formula, to me, is pretty straightforward. It's hard to execute, but it's pretty straightforward, which is to shorten the game on the ground. If you just look at the time of possession, they dominated time of possession, which is the way to go, not only for a team that has Joe Burrow as a quarterback, but any team. You know, you saw that on Monday night with what the Niners did with the Jets. I mean, they just completely obliterated the time of possession to the point where, you know, the Jets had the ball for, I don't know, 21, 22, 23 minutes, something like that. I think the Bengals had the ball for 25 or 26 minutes. So there's like when you have an 7, 8, 9 minute time of possession advantage over the opponent, you're going to win. You're winning not 10 out of 10 times, but very close, 9.5 out of 10 times. If you look at the play disparity, the Patriots ran 16 more plays than the Bengals did. So that's the formula. You know, it's not magic. Now, obviously, Brissett's going to have yards. You know, when you're leading pass catcher has 30 some odd yards like the other day for New England, you're not going to win many games that way. So that's an extreme case. So Brissett's going to have to play better in that regard. You know, he didn't throw any picks. You know, that's a feather in his cap. But primarily, if this can be a run-centric team that dominates time of possession and then by extension dominate the number of plays you run compared to your opponent, they have a chance to win games. Now, you're a little bit more bullish than I am.
Obviously.
I look at the first quarter of this season. You know, I've been trained enough by coaches, being around coaches for so long. They look at it like a football game. The season is a football game. Now, obviously, now there's 17 games instead of 16, so it's not an even split. But when you look at the first four games of the season, realistically, what can your team be after the first quarter? You had mentioned Seattle. Now, Seattle's a tough game. I got to be honest with you. And I think, you know, I don't think they're going to win that game. I understand the West Coast team coming out to the, you know, East Coast for a 1 o'clock game. I know what the history says about that. That's going to be tough sledding. Honestly, I don't know about winning the game at the Jets. And I'm not saying the Jets are as good as a lot of, you know, national pundits are saying, but I certainly think that that's a winnable game for each team. Like, I don't think you can guarantee and say the Jets are going to win that game or New England's going to win that game. The game is in New York. So, you know, if it's a coin flip, maybe it's a slight lean to the Jets, but you got them at 3-0. I think I could conceivably see a 1-2 start. I could see a 2-1 start. I don't see a 3-0 start. And then, look, to finish off the first quarter of the season, we're both going to have to agree on this. They're playing in San Fran. They're not going to win that game.
That's enough. I'm not sitting here predicting 3-0. I'm saying I see a scenario where they could be that way.
I mean, anything is possible. And I don't want to rain on your parade. You're a diehard Patriot fan. I would be surprised if they were 3-0. I would not be surprised if they were 2-1. But 3-0, that might be ambitious. But hey, you know what? That's what this week's for. The week between week one, the days between week one and week two. I mean, if you're a fan of a team that's 1-0, I mean, that you didn't anticipate being 1-0, you should puff out your chest. And if not, then you're not having fun. I mean, that this whole season for fans is about enjoying yourself. And if you think your team, you know, is not going to make the postseason, or you have low expectations, and your team comes out and shocks everyone with, frankly, I think a win that probably screwed a lot of people in their suicide pools, then you should be happy. I mean, we're midweek here. I mean, it's a little too early to concern yourself with Seattle. I would still be basking in the glow of winning in Cincinnati if I were a fan, to be honest with you.
It's funny. I have a friend that lives in Kentucky, just over the border from Cincinnati, and he actually was at the game. And I was telling him leading up to it, I'm like, you're going to go watch the Patriots get steamrolled. Like, it's not going to be close. And I'm watching this game and I'm like, ooh, you actually saw a pretty decent game. It was a close game. It was a good one to go to. And, you know, I think part of the reason it was so close too, obviously the Bengals didn't have T. Higgins.
Right.
Jamar Chase hadn't been in camp really doing anything. He was just getting back into it. You know, they're figuring out things, you know, with their new running back duo that they have. But at the end of the day, like, Joe Burrow not playing I don't think he played at all in the preseason. Like, that, obviously, he's showing some rust. And I think he did get dinged up on one of the plays. I think the fumble that he had, I forget who it was. One of the Patriots punched the ball out of his hand as he was kind of diving forward or sliding. He was kind of before he touched the ground, but because the fist hit the wrist and not the ball, it wasn't a fumble. He was down by contact, but you saw Joe Burrow coming up and he was shaking his hand. And there was actually a video of him like reaching down to pick up a Gatorade bottle.
Yeah.
He lifted it up like this and it's like, ooh, something's not right there. That's his throwing hand. It's like,
and that's the wrist. Yeah. That's the wrist he's had. He had problems with. And that's if I were a Bengals fan, I'd be really afraid that this is going to be some kind of nagging, reoccurring thing. It's not a new injury. It's the same hand wrist issue that he had. You know, full disclosure, I picked the Bengals to go to the Super Bowl, and just watching that performance on Sunday, you know, has me rethinking that whether that's even possible. At the same time,
if you look at the stats of Zach Taylor and the Bengals on opening day, I think he's been there 6 years. I think they've won one opening.
Is that right?
Something like that.
I didn't know
that. The guys on the Bengals pod brought that up, that they always just don't start the season on time. And that could say something. It is week one. So, like, we got to take week one. I always try to take week one for what it's worth. Obviously, I'm puffing my chest a little bit here because the Patriots got me a win when they didn't expect to, in a season where I'm expecting all losses. So anytime I get the win, it's like, let's go. But it is week one. And, you know, we'll see what happens if Higgins comes back. We'll see what happens with Joe Burrow's wrist. That's for me, that's the most concerning thing. You know, a guy who's been pretty injury prone throughout his career, and for someone of his caliber of player when he's healthy, to see that, that's the kind of thing you don't want to see happen to a player, you know, kind of have his career derailed by his injuries. And I have high hopes. I want him to be the one to take down Mahomes and Allen. Like, he's the next thing. Like, I don't want to see either one of those two doing anything in the AFC. So we'll see what happens there. I quickly want to touch on the other AFC East games. I don't want to spend too much time on it because I want to get into the week two, some of the matchups before we wrap up here. But obviously the Bills beat the Cardinals up in Orchard Park. That was a very disappointing thing for me, especially after seeing the first half of that game, and the Cardinals seemed to be having their will, and then they kind of just wet their pants and let the Bills win that one. The Bills defense, if I'm a Bills fan, I'm concerned about that defense. I know a couple of them had expressed that to me, and so we'll see what happens with them. Obviously, they snuck one out. They stole that. In my opinion, they stole that game. A couple of questionable calls at the end on the Cardinals drive there that were not called. I was vocal on Twitter about that. But at the end of the day, it's not the refs' fault. The Cardinals deserve to lose that game the way that had played out. Obviously, I don't know. You have any thoughts? You want to give anything on that before I quickly move on to the Dolphins and the Jets?
Yeah, I think Josh Allen needs a little bit more help. I talked about the Jane Daniels running 15, 16 times a game. That's not sustainable. What Josh Allen did, as great as Josh Allen is, that's not sustainable. He took too many hits. He also ran the ball 8, 9 times, something like that. Took a bunch of hits. He got sacked a few times.
He seeks out the contact.
It's really unbelievable. You know, we were just talking about Burrow. Burrow's a pocket passer, and he's been nicked up every single year. Meanwhile, you got Josh Allen, who runs like a maniac, and the guy's like made out of steel or something. It's really, I've never seen anything like it. He runs, and as you said, he doesn't avoid the contact. I know he's big, and that's great. I mean, that gives him a little bit of, you know, safety there, but ultimately you got to think that if he playing the way that he is playing, especially the way that he played in week one, he cannot do that consistently throughout the season, or he will get hurt. It's just, he needs help.
He's getting older, too. He's getting older.
Yeah, he's getting older. Okay. I mean, but he's still, like, I mean, you know, still a lot of the other night. But look, you can't ask Josh Allen to run for two touchdowns and throw two touchdowns every week. It's not, that's just not sustainable. He needs help. I thought Keon Coleman did a pretty good job for his first game, you know, only 50 or so yards, but I think they got somebody in him that they can rely on. They really did not utilize Dalton Kincaid at all. I mean, he was invisible in that game, and he needs to be a much more important piece of that offense to, you know, lighten the load on Josh Allen, because Josh Allen basically pulled him out of the fire week one. He's going to, you know, he's going to need some of that supporting cast to step up if they're going to have a, you know, realistic chance of winning this division, because again, playing like the way he did, they fell behind 10-0. You can't do that week in and week out in this league and have any kind of chance to consistently win.
Absolutely. Let's move on. I want to talk about the goddamn Jets. I'll tell you why I'm talking to him about talking like that about them at the end of the episode. But the goddamn Jets. Obviously, they got blown out. I think it wasn't really a close game. I mean, it might have been at some points, but San Francisco kind of had their way, especially without CMC, which was, you know, Jordan Mason filled right in. You know, I drafted him as my CMC handcuff, so I was feeling pretty good there. But, you know, the Jets defense, I think, was a little bit more concerning for me. I saw a report today about Sauce Gardner sitting on the sidelines for like, I think it was like nine plays by himself. On a knee. Like, that's not a recipe for success there. Aaron Rodgers, obviously, you know, it was a little rusty, but it's just the Jets. The Jets find a way to do this. And
yeah, it's funny because, you know, coming into the season, the defense supposedly was not a question mark. Now, I think they have one of the better defenses in the league. I don't think they're the best defense in the league. I think that gets overhyped by some people. They weren't particularly good against the run last year. They weren't horrible, but there were enough, you know, cracks in the armor against the run where, for my money, they were a really good pass defense. They play that cover three that Robert Saleh brought in from Seattle. You know, Seattle's used that dating back to the Legion of Boom days, the cover three, you know, Richard Sherman. And Sauce Gardner essentially is the Richard Sherman of that defense in that cover three scheme. But they couldn't stop the run. I mean, they couldn't tackle. Jordan Mason looked like CMC. You know, frankly, he was, you know, he was incredible. This is an undrafted guy, a backup running back. And I think that the 49ers showed the rest of the league, you know, where some of these vulnerable spots in the Jet defense is. Now, obviously, every team doesn't have the brain, the access to Kyle Shanahan's brain. So Shanahan's incredible at scheming up different run designs. So you're not going to get that week in and week out. So if you're a Jet fan, you can take some solace in that. But, you know, unacceptable to allow scoring drives on 8 consecutive possessions. I mean, that is unheard of. I think it's the first time in Jet history that's ever happened. I'd be curious to see how often that's actually happened in an NFL game in the last 50-some-odd years. Now, the Niners did have to settle for a lot of field goals, but ultimately they scored 32 points, which is, you know, too much for a team that's really going to be reliant on their defense. Because you had mentioned Aaron Rodgers. You know, I thought Rodgers looked really good on one drive, the scoring drive that ended on the short Breece Hall touchdown run. He made incredible passes to Garrett Wilson on a few third and long situations. And that was really vintage Aaron Rodgers. Unfortunately, it was a short sample size. He really took advantage of a free play later in the game where he found Alan Lazard for a touchdown. That's just smart football. Aaron Rodgers might be getting old, but you know his brain is as sharp as ever. So that's the advantage you have when you have Aaron Rodgers as your quarterback. The disadvantage, unfortunately, in 2024, he's not mobile at all. You can't have him, you know, moving the pocket, which is unfortunate because that was one of his strengths as a younger player. You also can't have a lot of long developing plays because, I mean, I think you can sense it. Rodgers does not want to get hit. And no quarterback does, obviously, but I think he is especially skittish about that because of A, his age, B, the injury he had last year. So he wants to get the ball out of his pocket, out of his hands as quickly as possible. That's a lot of short routes. And I think if you're a smart defensive coordinator, you're going to, you know, it sounds strange to say because it's Aaron Rodgers, but you're going to dare Aaron Rodgers to beat you over the top because I don't know if he can consistently do that. He took one or two deep shots on Monday night. You know, wasn't close. I remember one that wasn't close, but you know, I think that if you dare Aaron Rodgers to beat you consistently deep, I think you're going to be on the winning end of that because I don't think Rodgers can do that. I think he can get the ball out of his hands quickly. I think he can diagnose defenses pre-snap as good if not better than anyone in the league. So those are his strengths, but there are some real limitations with Aaron Rodgers in 2024 that we didn't even talk about, you know, as recently as 2021 or, you know, the second time he won his MVP, 2022. I guess it was 2021. So, you know, the Jets defense has to be on point. That's another way of me saying they cannot have performances like this because I don't think their offense, frankly, is creative enough to overcome it. I don't think they have the quarterback to consistently overcome it. I mean, I think you're going to see some moments this season where you're going to think Aaron Rodgers, wow, this guy's unbelievable. He's still got it. But I think they're just not going to be as consistent as they have been throughout his career. That's why it's incumbent upon the defense to really play better. You know, I mentioned Sauce Gardner, just to touch on that real quick. He had made a tackle on Deebo Samuel on a reverse, and he hurt his shoulder. And I think that was more about him. I don't know about him, you know, getting his wind back, but I think it kind of jolted him. You know, he hadn't obviously tackled since the end of last season. I think that was the reason. I don't think there was any kind of boycott. And anybody who knows Sauce Gardner, teammates, coaches, players. I mean, the guy, you know, say what you want about him, you know, whether he holds or not and gets away with holds, that's a different discussion. But I mean, he's a team guy, and I don't think he was boycotting anything. I think he was just kind of physically jarred by that hit, and it took him longer than what you, I think fans typically would think. Hey, you miss a play or two and you come back in, it just happened to take him 9 snaps. But yeah, the Jets to me are an intriguing story. They didn't get any real semblance of a pass rush, which I think only helps out Hassan Reddick's cause, because he's, you know, he's losing paychecks by the week, but doesn't seem to care. And the Jets, for, you know, some reason, some strange reason, are, you know, they don't seem any kind of hurry to get him back. I don't quite understand that. And I think Monday was a clear example of how they really could use not only a run stuffer, and that's not really what Reddick is, but they could use somebody to, you know, get home. And, you know, even though they had a couple sacks against Purdy, anybody who watched that game knows that Purdy had a lot of time in that pocket, and that was part of the reason why he found so many guys open in that against that Jet zone.
Yeah, well, that reasons everything you said about Aaron Rodgers. That's why I'm a little bullish on my Patriots in a couple of weeks.
They can win the game, but Burge, I'm not saying they're not going to win the game. If the game was in New England, I probably would pick New England, but it's in New York. I really think it's a toss-up, and in those scenarios, I typically go with the home team.
Fair enough. Let's move on to the final AFC East team. This game, I felt, was more about the losing team than the winning team. Dolphins win last second against the Jaguars. The Dolphins didn't start on time, that's for sure. They were down, you know, after the first half, and it just seemed like something with Jacksonville. They just kind of took their foot off the gas. You know, Tua had over 300 yards in this game. Tyreek Hill, you know, we all saw what happened with him pregame. I don't want to get into that at all, but we saw what happened there. He had himself a day. So did Jaylen Waddle. And the Dolphins did enough to squeak out a win in the Battle of Florida. And I think it was more indicative on Jacksonville just losing this game and not basically finishing the job in the second half than it was Miami impressing. They couldn't run the ball to save their lives. And, you know, as somebody who picked the Dolphins to win the AFC East this year,
so did I.
I'm like, got to show me more in week two. And this is a big one. We'll get into it. That's going to be the first game we're going to talk about week two. It's a big one for me. I'm a huge Miami Dolphin fan. By the time you're listening to this tonight. So I don't know if you had any thoughts on the Dolphins, but I was not impressed with week one.
Yeah. You know, I think that this is an example of a game that flips on one giant play. One, you know, it was a 14-0 deficit early. The Jags jumped on them early. You know, Miami really didn't do much until late in that third quarter on that long touchdown to Tyreek.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was 17-7 when he scored. That made it 17-14. Jaguars never scored again. You know, you tack on a couple field goals and, you know, you go home a loser if you're Jacksonville. So, I mean, that's the power of having Tyreek Hill. You can play poorly and that guy can shift the momentum in an instant. And I think that's really what you saw. Going from 17-7 to 17-14 after that 80-yard touchdown really changed the game, changed the fortunes late in the third quarter. The Jaguars really fell asleep in the second half. They couldn't do much of anything offensively. And you're right. The Dolphins, even for as much as, you know, we talk about Tyreek Hill and the chunk plays, their bread and butter is running. And their running backs averaged cumulatively averaged fewer than 3 yards a carry. And that's not typically what you see from a Mike McDaniel offense. So, you know, now they're dealing with a couple injuries as well. So I'd be curious to see, you know, how they roll things out in the backfield, tomorrow night, Thursday night against Buffalo. But I agree with you. They escaped with a win. Ultimately, it's a division game. I mean, it's not a division game. It's an AFC game, interconference game against a team that you may be competing with for a wild card spot or a playoff spot. So it's a big win. You know, not particularly impressive, but at the end of the day, it doesn't really matter that it was not that impressive. The fact is that they won. Now they've got a division game. You know, before you know it, they could be 2-0. And I didn't think, as you said, I agreed with you. I didn't think they looked particularly good in week one.
Yeah, they got to turn it around quick because, like we said, let's move on. Bills traveling to South Beach for Thursday night football against the Dolphins. A big AFC. This is a big early season
AFC
playoff matchup. Obviously, it's big for me. I'm going to be, you know, I wish I had a Miami. Where's Puma? I got to call Puma up. Give me a Dolphins hat. Be wearing that Dolphins hat tomorrow night.
That's right. That's right.
If I was Buffalo, I'd be really nervous about Waddle and Hill. You know, you see what their defense did, you know, last week against the Cardinals. Be a little worried about that. Obviously, the injuries to, you know, Raheem Mostert's already been ruled out. Devon Achane is going to be a game time decision. And then after that, they have Jeff Wilson, who's still around in the league, to be honest with you. He's about, you know, former 49er running back now down in Miami. So if Achane's ready, I mean, he looked pretty good in the passing game as well against the Jaguars. I think he went for like 70 something yards on 7 receptions out of the backfield. Yeah. And he was intriguing last year. I think he got hurt. He was very intriguing before he got hurt last year. I know from a fantasy perspective is why he was one of my keepers this year. And if I was Buffalo's defense, I'd be worried, you know, if I was a fan, because their defense was nothing against Kyler Murray. I didn't expect that game to be that close. I mean, I'm not very high on the Cardinals this year, but they showed me something in that game. I know they ended up, you know, melting down at the end, but at the same time, that was an impressive performance. So I'm obviously a Dolphins fan on Thursday night. I don't know. I believe they're going to win. I trust Mike McDaniel, although the short week this early in the season is a little concerning, especially with such a big matchup, you know, which is definitely going to have implications in the standings of the AFC East,
yeah,
you know, come December. So what are your thoughts on this one?
Well, I hate the idea of a rivalry game, a division, interdivision game, being on a Thursday night. You know, mm-hmm. I don't like that. I don't know why they – I know why they did it, because it's such a you know, two high-profile teams. But same division, I feel like a full week of preparation is more fair. I know that they're both going to be on short weeks, but I don't like it. I don't like the concept. I don't like the idea of it. Yeah. You know, you hit the nail on the head about whether, you know, the Bills can slow down Tyreek and Waddle. I think a lot of that will depend on whether they get pressure. I mean, the AFC Defensive Player of the Week is Greg Russo. He had 3 sacks last week for Buffalo. So, you know, if he can like bring heat on Tua, then I think that mitigates, you know, some of the effectiveness from those two dynamic wide receivers. And you had mentioned Jeff Wilson. He's definitely going to be in the rotation if Achan doesn't play. They also have Jalen Wright, who was a healthy scratch. He's a rookie. Yeah, he's a 4th-round rookie that they're really high on from Tennessee. You know, played fairly well in the preseason, but it's the preseason against backups. But a really strong, fast, powerful guy. He could be a guy that, you know, people are talking about Friday morning, for all we know. But let's see if Achan plays. He's dealing with an ankle, and that's really been the bugaboo for Achan. You know, dynamic player, so fast, but nicked up routinely. He was nicked up in college. You know, nicked up as a rookie. And they used him in a very interesting way last week. 7 catches, as you mentioned, you know, more like a wide receiver than a running back. You know, we'll see if he can play, if he morphs back into more of a running back without Mostert in the game. But, you know, I think this could be an opportunity for a guy like Jalen Wright to kind of introduce himself to the rest of the league on a national stage in prime time. I think he's a really good player. Jeff Wilson, to me, is a vastly underrated player. He kind of followed the same footsteps of Raheem Mostert, like a journeyman who's familiar with the Shanahan McDaniel system, played with Mike McDaniel in San Francisco, so he understands the scheme. Even last week, he only had 5 carries, but he averaged over 5 yards a carry, so he knows how to run in this system. Just a matter of whether the offensive line can do a better job than they did last week, because, you know, as we both said, the running backs didn't do well. So it's a tough spot for the Bills secondary. They're going to need help up front, and McDermott's going to have to scheme up some stuff to generate pressure on Josh Allen. The problem, of course, is – I mean, not Josh Allen, on Tua. The problem, of course, is if you do that, you might have some one-on-one opportunities for Waddle and Tyreek, and they can burn you. And just as we talked about, one play can flip a game.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And, you know, do you think Dolphins got it? You think the Dolphins got it?
Yeah, I mean, look, I hate betting against Josh Allen, and the Bills did sweep Miami last year, including in Miami in that last game of the regular season, which was so pivotal. I picked the Dolphins to win the division. I'm not going to change that because that'd be really awful. I don't want to be labeled a flip-flopper. but you know, I hate betting against Josh Allen. At the end of the day, you know, picking aside, I'm going to pick the home team. It's a short week. Traveling, you know, on a short week is difficult enough. These teams are fairly evenly matched. So I'm going to go with the home team, take Miami.
I was expecting you to do the contrarian route to try to get me riled up there.
No, look, but I'm not going to be surprised. I mean, my Dolphins got swept by them last year. So who's to say that they can't lose a third straight game against these guys?
Absolutely. So it'll be interesting to see. I'm looking forward to Thursday Night Football. And believe it or not, Patriots and the Jets the week after are on Thursday Night Football too. So two AFC East matchups, Thursday Night Football. So very interesting to see how they did that. Good time for one more intriguing matchup. I want to throw it to you. Which one do you want to talk to? You mentioned two to me before we started recording. Which one do you want to hit on?
All right. Well, the layup is the Bengals at Chiefs because it's Burrow Mahomes. I don't know if it's the same Joe Burrow. So let's go to the other game that a lot of people are not talking about, but it's a rematch of last year's NFC divisional round game. Tampa Bay at the Lions. Nobody gives the Buccaneers credit. I didn't even pick them to win the division. I think they've won the division three consecutive years at like 9 wins. But they looked really good. I know they played the Commanders last week, but Baker Mayfield, my God, that guy looks reborn, and he's making the Browns look worse with each successive touchdown pass based off of what the Browns have at quarterback right now. So I'm looking forward to that game. You know, the Lions, really good win the other night against the Rams, but I think this could be a very entertaining game. Bucks at Lions, two legit teams. Two playoff caliber teams, one Super Bowl contending team, one team that doesn't get any respect but consistently makes the playoffs. That's a game outside of the low hanging fruit, the Chiefs Bengals game. The Buck Lion game is a game that I'm really looking forward to. I could see the Bucks winning that game, frankly.
I'm a big Lions guy. Last year, I was a huge Lions guy.
I have them going to the Super Bowl, but that doesn't mean I can't pick them to lose.
No, that's fine. That's fine. We last year were a very big Houston Texan and Detroit Lion podcast when we first started this podcast. We were right on that bandwagon, and it was early too. Like, it was like, I wouldn't say early because we started in the midseason, but like, we were like, from like the start, we were like, let's go Lions, let's go Texans. Love CJ Stroud, love Amon-Ra St. Brown, love what the Lions are doing, break some kneecaps, whatever. Like, I wanted to see the Lions win that NFC championship game last year so bad. So bad. I was so disappointed when San Francisco won that I'm like, oh, I got to watch a rematch of a Super Bowl a couple of years ago. It was so disappointing. But at the end of the day, I want to see the Lions win every game. I agree with you about Tampa Bay and especially Baker Mayfield. He has done more than I thought he would do down there. And I can tell you that our buddy Hogan absolutely cannot stand Baker Mayfield in Oklahoma, and he's a big Texas guy.
Right. Of course. Yeah. Right.
So, but it's hard to really be, you got to start giving them some respect. I mean, obviously one of those years, you know, Brady was there that they went to the playoffs, maybe even two of them. I don't know, but they did, you know, Baker Mayfield came in and nobody expected that team to make the playoffs last year at all. And they kind of surprised everybody last year. I think Mike Evans is one of the most underrated receivers in his entire, for the duration of his career. Is one of the most underrated receivers. Always talked about as one of those good receivers, but he was never really talked about in the elite class of the receiver. And I don't think he's had less than 1,000 yards. He's had so many consistent 1,000-yard receptions. And it's incredible to see that. And to see that performance that they gave on Sunday, I won't be surprised if they beat the Lions. I'm kind of in that book. I mean, I'm going to take the Lions to win. Just if I got to pick a coin flip, I pick with my heart.
I'm picking the Lions, but I would not be surprised in the least bit if they did not win. The Bucks are great. I mean, honestly, the Bucks, and I'm a little partial, so full disclosure, I'm a big fan of Todd Bowles. You know, I know Todd, so I, you know, I'm always rooting for him. And you know, based off of what transpired in New York, I think he's kind of revived his head coaching life, and I think that Baker, I mean, he was left for dead when he was in Carolina. And then Sean McVay, really, I think going to the Rams late in that season really helped him to kind of bounce back. Former number one pick. The guy is a good player. I can see why he was the number one pick now. The guy has a lot of traits that are, exceptional. Now, he's not a top five quarterback or anything of that nature, but you can absolutely win with him. And I just, I root for guys to come back when people, leave him for dead. And, you know, I think Bowles falls under that category. I know that Baker falls under that category. And it's a really good story. And again, I don't have any skin in the game. I'm not a Bucks fan. I'm a fan of Todd Bowles, but you know, I appreciate when guys face you know, difficulty and people just kind of throw them on the street like they're trash. They don't mean anything. They don't matter. And all they do is work and continue believing in themselves, and then bring them back to a level that they know they can play at or they can coach at. And I think that's kind of where Baker Mayfield and Todd Bowles are right now.
And that's why you love Tom Brady, because he was left for dead at Michigan.
Wait, look, I got all the respect in the world for Tom Brady. Now, I did poke fun at him earlier in his career when the defense clearly carried those teams. Yeah. But, like, from the age 30 to 40-plus, very few, if anybody, better. But in his 20s, let's be honest, Peyton Manning was clearly a better player than he was.
But Brady had the wins. That's what matters. But, I agree with you there.
No, Brady has the better career. But I was Team Manning until the light switch flipped on or something flipped on for Tom Brady, where he went from throwing third for, what, 3,300, 3,400, 3,500 yards a season and like 26 to 28 touchdowns to throwing 35 to 40 and, you know, 4,500 yards. Maybe that was always in him, and maybe it was the system that held him down. But he clearly was a much different player and a much more productive individual player in his 30s and 40s. Than he was in his 20s, which is obviously unheard of.
It was after Randy Moss. It was after that 07 season that stuff kind of changed. Yeah.
I got a quick Randy Moss story, and I know we're long on time.
Nope, we're good.
Randy Moss's first game as a New England Patriot was at Giant Stadium against the Jets. Randy Moss did not play that, preseason because he had a hamstring injury. He had just come off a really down season with the Raiders. Everyone pretty much wrote him off and said, hey, you know what? This is the end of Randy Moss. His career is over. Great career. He's clearly done. Belichick trades for him. He sits out the preseason because he got a hamstring injury. Nobody expects anything, right? Tom Brady throws, I think, 3 touchdowns to Randy Moss in that first game against the Jets. In the locker room, I'm talking to Kerry Rhodes, who's actually in the media right now, but he was a safety, starting safety, really good player, quality player for the Jets. And, you know, he was one of the many people that was burned in some respect by Randy in that game. And, you know, you ask Kerry Rhodes, I mean, were you surprised by Randy Moss? You hadn't seen him off preseason. He had a hamstring injury, wrong side of 30 or maybe close to 30, wherever he was. You know, a lot of people wrote him off. And so I remember we were in a scrum, and I asked him, Kerry Rhodes that question. And he looks at me, he's like, well, evidently he was fresh. And like to this day, that still makes me laugh. I don't know what it is, but I was right next to Kerry Rhodes. He looked at me, just like gave me that shrug, like, hey, evidently he was fresh. And obviously that set the stage for a career season for Randy.
That's great. Evidently he was fresh. That's
evidently he was fresh.
Elegant way of putting it.
Yeah. That's incredible. I mean, I didn't know they were going undefeated. Obviously, I didn't know that was going to happen, but I was like, man, this is Tom Brady unlike I've ever seen him. Like he'd been a winner at that point, obviously established as a winner, established as a very good to great quarterback because he had won, but statistically he never was up to par with Peyton Manning and some of the other guys. And then, like I said, for the next decade, maybe it was work ethic, whatever it was. He just elevated his game unlike anybody has elevated their game as they've gotten older that I've ever seen in the NFL.
Which is absolutely fantastic. Thank you for sharing that story. That's hilarious. The way he put that. Oh, that's great.
It was great. And Kerry's a great guy. And, you know, the way he said it, I think I remember when he said it, you know, I'm busy working. But then when I got upstairs to the press box, I just I listened to the recording of it as I was transcribing my notes, and it made me laugh. And now, you know, 15 some odd years later, every time I think of it or I share a story, it makes me laugh. It was just a funny moment based off of like what transpired the rest of that season for Moss and the Patriots.
That's great. That's great. I gotta get rid of the laughing now, because I gotta do a quick vent session, a couple minutes here about fantasy football, because I got really effed in week one. All right.
Wait, is this your version of the Van Pelt bad beat section?
This is a bad beat. Yeah, we can call it a bad beat. Yeah, it's kind of what it was. I'm a defending champ, all right? Defending champ in this Dynasty League that I'm in. So I don't know how familiar you are with the Dynasty format of fantasy football.
I'm very familiar.
Okay. I've worked very hard. I've been screwed so many times by bad beats, being the team that scores the most points but gets everybody's best week all the time. This week, week one, I'm playing against a team that was not very good last year, kind of turned it around. I had a little bit of turnover. I got rid of CMC and, you know, did that whole thing. But I scored no points. I was like in the high 70s. Like, it was really low half-point PPR league. But I'm playing against this team, and I'm watching the score go up. I'm like, all right, I still got this. I gotta get like 79, 80 points. I'll be good. I'll be good to win this game, all right? It's going to be enough. So I go into Sunday Night Football. We'll start there. I think I was either down a couple of points or up a couple of points. Somehow it worked out. I had Amon-Ra St. Brown playing. Dude gets two catches for like 14 yards. I'm like, are you kidding me? After the year you had last year, this is what you give me on week one. I'm like, okay, it's week one. All right. I'm within a point or two. This guy's got the San Francisco defense playing. I got the Jets defense playing. I'm like, I just got to get one more point than him. Goddamn Jets let me down. That defense let me down. They give up 32 points, 6 field goals to Jake Booty. I'm like, I lose by 0.8 of a point. You look at my bench, I started Jalen Hurts. That didn't really work out very well. I had CJ Stroud on the bench. I had Baker Mayfield on the bench. Great. I started DeAndre Swift. He did nothing. J.K. Dobbins sitting on my bench. I'm just looking at my bench, and I'm like, that's going to be one of those years, isn't it? Here we go. And on top of that, you know, I lose. I get destroyed in three of the other leagues that I'm in. I win one of them running away. Thank you, Tyreek Hill and CeeDee Lamb. But, like, I'm like, do not do this. This is like the bragging rights league I'm in. I've been doing this with my buddies for like 20 years. And I'm like, you're going to do this to me now in this league as I'm the defending champ, waiting for the trophy to show up at my house from my friend to put the name on it and everything. I'm like, you got to do this to me week one. 79 points should be enough against this team. And I lose by 8 goddamn tenths of a point.
week two, I got to move on. I feel your pain. So, like, as I said to you before we started recording, you got to get rid of defenses and kickers.
We got rid of the kickers. The kickers are gone, but we still have to
get rid of defense. It's too much variance. It's too lucky, and you put all your hard work in investing and drafting individual players, and then you have a defense kind of screw you. So I feel your pain, but I don't have that much sympathy because you shouldn't be in a league with defenses, but it's just one man's opinion. I have my own bad beats. I'm going to keep it short. I'm in two leagues. My one league is with a lot of my closest friends, 31 years. I did win that league. However, I traded Xavier Worthy 2 days before the season started. I got some flack. I got a buddy of mine who's a commissioner. The guy is relentless. I mean, we have a nice like back and forth where there's a lot of trash talking and a lot of demeaning of each other's teams. The funniest part about it is he's a physician, so – you know, he texts more on the text thread than anybody else. I think like anytime he's got a free moment in between patients, he's in attack mode. So we have a good time, but I mean, relentless, the Worthy thing. In my other league, I've been in for about 15 years. Just, I mean, complete bad luck. I have Jordan Love got hurt. I have Higgins who didn't play. I have CMC who I traded up for. I had the number 6 pick in the draft. I traded up for the number 1 pick. You know, gave us some draft capital. Obviously, CMC didn't play. I wasn't smart enough to draft Jordan Mason, so I think I doubled up in points in that game, in that league. So we all have, our bad beat stories. What I've learned throughout the years, I'm sure you've learned this too, Burge, is that nobody cares about your bad beats in fantasy football. You know, I try to share my misery with my wife, and she's a saint, and she'll listen. But I can tell she's like, can we talk about something else?
Oh, my wife is sick of fantasy football. I'm telling you, I would sit like, I don't know, my son was, I don't know, an infant. So he's, you know, sleeping in the boppy pillow on the pillow. And I got one of my closest buddy who I'm in the Dynasty League with. We would have phone calls for like 2 hours just talking about Dynasty. Well, this guy. Oh, we could make this trade. Oh, we could trade this draft cap. This contract, we cut this guy at the end of the year. I got to have this much cap space. And I go to talk to my wife about it. And she's like, can you just do something else, please? Talk about something else.
So I got a story. I'm having some reno work done in my house. And the first day was Monday. I hear my contractor outside. He's in the driveway. He's on the phone. And you can hear his voice. So I open the door. And I'm like, I'm not making this up for the podcast. This is legitimately what he said. He's talking to somebody. He said, okay, who should we put a waiver claim in for, Alec Pierce or Khalil Shakir? He's sharing a fantasy football team. He gets off the phone. I'm like, are you talking fantasy football? He's like, yeah, I gotta think about who I want to put a waiver claim in for. So it's universal among guys, at least. So it's actually pretty funny. And one last thing, I'd be remiss if I didn't tell you, my buddy, who is the commissioner in the league I've been in for 31 years, who's a physician, he has done, before the season started, he had done 500 best ball drafts. So he had done 500 drafts. So that tells you the level of whatever craziness that our league's about. But
if I had the time for football to do that, I would do it.
I'm telling you, he does these. He had another buddy of mine has done I think 200 best ball drafts. You guys coming. He works in Philly, so he takes the train. He's like, you know, when I'm on the train, I'll just do a draft. It's, you know, costs like $2 or $3. And then he said the next thing he knew, he'd done like over 200 of them on the train coming, going to and from work. So
good way to spend $600.
Yeah. It adds up quickly, man. It adds up. I'm not sure he told his wife, but yeah.
Oh, man. Well, I just want to say thanks for filling in for Hogan, Manish. I love coming on here and talking football with you. I love getting the stories, the insight, and I had a really good time tonight. I can't wait to do it again with you. We'll see what Hogan's work schedule looks like. Hopefully we'll get him back next week. We send our best to Hogan. Again, Manish, thank you again. Absolute blast.
Thanks, Burge. I appreciate it. I'll be rooting for your Patriots to go 2-0 before they can, you know, before the Thursday night game.
Well, otherwise you'll know I'll be sitting over here and
3-0. I'm penciling you in 3-0, and then you'll be at 3-0. You'll be feeling so good that you'll think that they can pull off the upset in San Francisco.
Yeah, well, we'll see about that. We'll see about that. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in to episode 43. We will catch you next week. Have a good week. Peace.